Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, thank you for that, Alex, and apologies for being late and for having to leave a little bit more, a little bit earlier than I'd hoped to. Health is usually quite a prominent feature on the parliamentary timetable, and today is no exception as we're debating the Francis Report 1 year on. But I'm really pleased to be invited to be here, and just as the previous speaker ended with a thank you, I want to begin with a thank you, because I know that the vast majority of people here are operating on the front line, delivering services to some of the most vulnerable people in our society. So thank you for what you do. I know that many of you will have been doing it for many years and will continue to do it for many years as governments and ministers come and go. And we don't get the chance often enough to say thank you and to record your service. And I give credit to you for that. You know better than I that meeting the needs of the most vulnerable people in our society, those with complex health and other problems, is a major challenge. And that, of course, hasn't got any easier in recent years. Just as we begin in the department to try and put a sharper focus on health inequalities, we're obviously dealing with an extraordinary combination of new and growing pressures in the health sector, the challenges of demographics, of the ageing population, increasing user expectations, and of course, you know, the tough financial environment. I'm sure that people earlier in the conference have spoken about this. I'm sure it's much on the minds of many of the people here. There's no getting away from it. It is a tough financial environment that we all operate in, albeit one in which the government has done its best to protect health and indeed ring-fence the budget. But I know that elsewhere, and particularly local government, it's been a very challenging few years, and many people have had to show considerable creativity and determination to deliver services in that environment. The health system, though, needs to continue to prioritise the health needs of the most vulnerable, just as we seek to make those efficiencies and to understand how we can make the system more sustainable for the long term. The health reforms created a new health system, coming towards the end of its first year now. In my area of public health, obviously a big devolution of health services and responsibilities to local government. But the system also put in core new duties, new legal duties in the Act for NHS England and clinical commissioning groups to make health inequalities much more central to the functioning of the NHS. And, you know, in day-to-day life as a minister, and we see it in other parts of the health service, we all of us have to at all times ask, so how would this affect the most vulnerable people? That's the reality, the day-to-day reality of that duty that we put into the Act. It's not a nod in that direction. It has to be something that is uppermost on our minds. And I think I probably ask that question, how would this affect the most vulnerable people we're dealing with every day in at least one meeting that I'm in? But we are explicitly protecting and ring-fencing public health spending. And again, there are responsibilities now sitting within local government, within the health areas that they're responsible for addressing these health inequalities. They are responsible, local government now, local authorities have responsibility for health improvement and inequality reduction. And we're strengthening the focus on inequality reduction rather than diluting it. As the steward of the health system, the Department of Health obviously has to work to ensure the system meets our aims. One of the first meetings I attended after being appointed was a meeting of the Ministerial Working Group on tackling and preventing homelessness. And actually, the interesting thing was I was one of, I think, half a dozen ministers around the table, all of them looking in their own areas at how they could address this. And I think one of the most interesting aspects I've discovered as a relatively new minister of the way government is trying to do its business is trying increasingly to recognise that people and their problems don't sit in silos with one label or another over them. Often the way we can improve their lives, actually responsibility sits across a whole load of different areas. So increasingly we try to work in multi-departmental ministerial groups looking at complex issues like this one. And we've seen that, for example, I think start to bear some fruit in things like the Troubled Families Programme, where we've said, look, we've got families within our communities that have numerous problems and face numerous challenges, but actually we need to get everyone who's involved in their lives around one table to understand what it is that we can do to help them move forward and to make more of their opportunities. we heard at that meeting, that first meeting I attended, from representatives of some of the leading homeless sector organisations. And we had a really interesting conversation with some young homeless people from the National Youth Reference Group. And I think we were all struck by the resilience and the determination that they showed to not let being homeless become an insurmountable barrier to getting on with their life. Just like any other young people, they talked about their hopes and dreams, the things they wanted to be, the qualifications they wanted to get, the jobs they wanted to aspire to. And for the challenge to us as ministers was to think about, well, what are the systems we can put in place to put the right support there so at the right time they can get their lives back on track. And I think some of the things that we've started to think about and that we addressed just after the young people had spoken to us is to talk about the way we design services for the general population that sometimes creates great barriers for particular groups and particularly those at a difficult stage in their lives. We know that people who find themselves homeless are likely to experience significant health problems. I think that's well understood. Much worse, actually, than faced by the rest of society. But they often also face great difficulties in accessing health services designed for the vast majority of the rest of society. Services that don't really work for people with chaotic lives, systems that work around particular appointments at particular places, that appointments that once missed take some time to rebook and you have to be quite organised to do it. All of those things are the sort of areas that we are thinking about and need to continually address to understand how we can really break through for the young people we heard from on that occasion and other homeless people. So we need to think harder about how we get services, and that's public services and those provided by other sectors, to integrate, to meet the needs of people at the point of need. And why is that important? Well, I'm sure you know better than I do, but over the last few years, we've increased our understanding of the issues of exclusion and vulnerability. The Inclusion Health Programme has been instrumental in leading that work. And of course, you heard from Steve earlier, but I just want to pay tribute to you and recognise the astonishing commitment and leadership that Steve Field has given. He chairs the National Inclusion Health Board, and I've certainly found him inspirational in the time that I've been a minister, and has given me great insight into some of the challenges of being homeless, which is a terrible thing. And we know it's not good for people. We know deteriorating health follows. But I think that also, I think someone, the previous speaker, referred to kind of being hard-nosed. We also know that that homelessness is a real problem for the whole of society. It isn't something which people can say, well, it hasn't happened to me, so it's irrelevant. You know, one of the other areas in my portfolio is TB. We know, for example, that there's a much greater associated risk with TB and homelessness. And an untreated person with TB can infect 10 to 15 other people in a year. So one of the other areas we're looking at with the TB strategy that Public Health England are developing is how we can make sure we recognise that and how we can particularly target the groups who are most vulnerable. And of course, it's not good for the NHS and the public purse and the economy. Homeless people attend A&E 6 times as often as those who have a home, and are admitted to hospital 4 times as often, and when they are there, they stay 3 times as long. So it doesn't take much to work out that actually being able to solve and address health problems in an appropriate setting and trying to get it right first time, or at least earlier, is a big saving, not just a big saving of human misery, but actually a big saving to the public purse as well. So we're very conscious of that. It results in secondary care costs that are 8 times higher than the average. And I think a conservative estimate is about £85 million that's spent annually on acute care for those with no fixed abode. So I know that you've been talking about integration and innovation during the course of the day, and I'm sure we'll return to that. But I just want to say a word about how we're trying to encourage that. We know it's a challenge, and the government's investing in local service providers. We've introduced new legal duties requiring health, social care, and health-related services to be integrated where this can reduce health inequalities. But it's one thing to introduce a legal duty. It's obviously a lot of it is about actually what you fund and what you put in place and how you encourage and how you sponsor and champion best practice. Through the £10 million Homeless Hospital Discharge Fund, which I know Steve touched on, we're encouraging local organisations to integrate services by getting those local partnerships to come together to bid. We want to see key partners, the homeless sector, the NHS, local authorities, working together to ensure safe discharge from hospital for people with nowhere to go to, nowhere to live, and to integrate those services from that point of discharge. The fund's also encouraging innovation by supporting the development of new hostel provision. One of the key aims of the fund is to secure appropriate facilities for those that require ongoing medical support. Going back to that point that we don't want people just going around the revolving door. It's utterly miserable for them and completely self-defeating for the system. But all too often the homeless end up in a hostel that's an inappropriate environment for their treatment plans and for their recovery. And apart from being standing here as a minister, I'm also a constituency member of Parliament. I represent Battersea in central London, so I've seen a lot of these challenges. One of my most long-running pieces of casework is with somebody stuck in just that revolving door. Very, very sad case, and you know, I see it round and round this chap goes. Through the health system, through the prison system, all of these things. And it's really difficult. I know from trying to get involved on that one case, I know how difficult it is to sort of stop the door revolving and try and get people the right care at the right time to help them break the cycle. So we want to ensure that adequate provision of respite care facilities is there, available when people are discharged. Local partnerships responded to that fund with some really innovative proposals, and we're funding around 50 projects now around the country. And, you know, we're amazed at the commitment and the innovation we're seeing. Some of it I'm sure you will have heard from today. Some of it was touched on in the previous presentation. And one of them, for example, is the £3.6 million discharge network that's been developed by St Mungo's. And I've heard about other examples, and which I'm hoping to visit over the next few months. Pathways proposal to establish the UK's first medically-led short-stay medical respite centre for homeless people leaving hospital. A great idea. Many other projects. There's a small-scale one in Milton Keynes where they're putting a discharge protocol in place and training staff to a variety of other models providing dedicated support staff, such as in Wigan. We've also got the provision of appropriate accommodations such as the Cornwall Intermediate Care and Recovery Facility. And we're keen to see the evaluation which identifies those new models of care. And as the projects seek to continue, we need local health and local authority commissioners to provide the funding to maintain those services when they're proven to be effective. And obviously we're going to be watching those developments closely. And one of the great things about a conference like this that brings together so many frontline practitioners is you have a chance to share that good practice. And one of the things that I'm very conscious of as a minister, where one has devolved a lot of my responsibilities now sit, and a lot of the leadership sits with local authorities, there is a real role for me and for others to highlight where we see great practice in order that it can be spread more quickly and we don't rely on a sort of slow process of osmosis. We want to make sure that where people have really got something right, that we talk about it, and we never ever let the kind of not invented here syndrome stop us adopting someone else's great idea if it's really working and it's appropriate for your area. We aim to maintain the focus on integration in 2015-16, and I can announce that we'll be investing £40 million of health funding in homeless hostel refurbishment. Now, we're going to be spending some time looking at options. We've already looked at this in some detail. We want to spend a little bit more time looking at the options we have for investing that £40 million, but we'll be announcing the details of the programme shortly. But what is certain is that we're going to maintain that focus on integration and innovation. And again, we'll be looking for bids from local partnerships, asking them to explain how they'd use the capital funding as an opportunity to integrate service delivery. The investment in hostel refurbishment will be informed by what we learn from the Homeless Hospital Discharge Fund, where hostels have those facilities for ongoing health needs. And we're also looking to invest in proposals developed by our colleagues in DCLG for an innovative programme to support young homeless people. People like the ones I heard from at that very early meeting. People want to just achieve their dreams through education, through training, through jobs, and through good health. And we aim to provide in that, providing them a platform for life to help make sure they can be as successful as any young person wants to be. I mentioned earlier how the Inclusion Health Programme had helped us to understand the issues on exclusion and vulnerability. Within our broad strategy to tackle health inequalities across the country, we are addressing the health needs of the most vulnerable people through this programme. At an early stage, there's been a focus on the health outcomes, not just of the homeless, but also of gypsies and travellers, of sex workers and vulnerable migrants, all of whom have extremely poor health outcomes. And it's true to say we'll never make probably a political headline in terms of people agitating on behalf of them. So that's why it's really important that those of us working within the health system continue to champion the need to give attention to these groups. When I attended my first meeting of the National Inclusion Health Board just a few weeks ago, I was impressed by the work being undertaken by the four working groups, and in particular how we can start to improve the data that we collect on the health of vulnerable groups. I mean, it goes without saying that some of these groups and people are much harder to understand from a data point of view because of the challenges of collecting it. But in doing that effectively, we can begin to put together better service models and learn what works as we see and spread it across the country. And it also really helps us with improving the training of staff. Over the next month or so, we'll be publishing a number of reports, toolkits and research papers from the Inclusion Health Programme. And the first will be the Hidden Needs Report. And that's a very detailed piece of research looking at available data on the four priority groups and, importantly, where are our gaps in data and research. Those will set Department of Health, Public Health England and NHS England a big challenge to work together to explore how we can fill the gaps and be better informed about what we can do for the most vulnerable. The Faculty of Homelessness and Inclusion Health is using this event to launch the revised standards for commissioners and service providers. And I know that's been developed with support from Inclusion Health. So I'm really pleased to see that those standards have been endorsed by the Royal College of Physicians. And I very much encourage the adoption of the standards by the health system more generally. I know that Steve's referred to them being adopted by CQC for inspection of GPs. So, you know, congratulations on that piece of work, and I really do hope to see those standards championed. I hope I've given you a flavour of what we're doing at the department with support from all those working on the Inclusion Health Programme and how seriously we take our duties to improve the health of the most vulnerable in our society. But we're also seeking to explore that imagination, that creativity and that dedication that comes from the front line. And those of you who, as I said before, we know in difficult and challenging financial times are actually innovating and integrating and coming up with brilliant ideas about how to solve these very, very difficult and long-running problems. But we can only do so much in the centre. As I say, the real work is done locally, with the health system taking the lead on reducing health inequalities and making sure that we take as much note and as much care of the needs of those in the most difficult circumstances as we do of everybody else. And we want to make sure that the health system is there right alongside people as they look to rebuild their lives and explore their full potential. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you again for what you all do.